Well, with the playing of that familiar theme song, it's time to go out to the other coast of the United States from New York. It's Michael Snyder, and he's in Hollywood where they ostensibly make those movies. Hello there, Michael.
Well, hi, Alex, and hello to the Gabnet listeners and viewers. And, you know, honestly, they do make them here, but there's been such a migration to other locations. There's not enough studio activity in L.A. these days, I think, which may explain, like, closing businesses and stuff like that. But the lead review we have, the main new film, was shot all over the world, you know, and to its credit, boy, it looks that way up on the big screen. It's great. It's great in that regard. Shall we get to it?
Go right ahead. I've had my mic turned off. Go right ahead.
Oh, wait a minute. You don't want to stall like that. Let's get to it, though. The Odyssey is like the two-ton gorilla. Nobody else wants to put a movie out this week because The Odyssey is here, and it's blockbuster-wise filmmaker Christopher Nolan's nearly three-hour-long adaptation of Homer's classical epic Greek poem about Odysseus, the warrior and the king of Ithaca, who's trying to get back to his kingdom, his wife Penelope, and his son Telemachus after the Trojan War. You know, you might call it home sweet Homer. I don't know. He wants to get back to his palace and his wife and kid. But whatever you call it, it's magnificent, sprawling cinematography. As said a few minutes ago, exotic settings, shot on location with 70 millimeter IMAX cameras, swaggering and somewhat tender performances now and again from an all-star cast featuring Matt Damon as Odysseus, Anne Hathaway as Penelope, and Tom Holland as Telemachus, as well as Robert Pattinson as Antinous, who's kind of a vile suitor of Penelope while Odysseus is away. Charlize Theron is the seductive Calypso, who he meets on his journeys. Samantha Morton is the witchy Circe. John Bernthal is Menelaus, an ally of Ithaca. Kind of interesting. You got John Bernthal and you have Tom Holland, who are also both in Spider-Man Brand New Day. And these two movies, people are hoping that they save Hollywood this summer because the blockbusters are not doing well at the box office. Anyway, among the other performers, Mia Goth is a devious handmaiden to the queen, and Benny Safdie is Agamemnon, the general leading the war against Troy, which is actually covered in Homer's pre-Odyssey poem, The Iliad, but it's dealt with in flashback, because you got Odysseus telling his tale to Calypso after washing up on her island. And yeah, you know, purists and racists and transphobes will and have been whining about the non-traditional or colorblind casting. Lupita Nyong'o as Helen of Troy, Himesh Patel as Eurylochus, John Leguizamo as Umeus, who is the Umeus, he's the blind seer, Zendaya plays Athena, the goddess, who shows up in kind of ghostly form. And Elliot Page is Sinon, who is a warrior under the great Odysseus. And incels are going to incel, and bigots are going to bigots. To hell with them. You know, and by the way, speaking of hell, there's even a vision of the afterlife here. And more importantly, there are jaw-dropping battle sequences, wild and crazy creatures of mythology. You remember, you know, the Cyclops, etc. Creepy interludes of sorceress madness, moving moments of intimacy. And there's a thrilling score from Ludwig Göransson, who's the guy who wrote the Mandalorian theme. I had some minor quibbles with the script, as in what aspects of the plot were emphasized by Nolan and what he changed from the original Homer piece and what was left out from that tale. And there's an occasional use of modern words, and most of the dialogue, if not all of it, is delivered in American accents. And that's a little distracting, but man, on the whole, wow.
Yeah. Is there any nudity in it?
I would hope there's a little nudity
because
in
I'm,
it.
Because I'm a homosexual.
Oh, very cute. There you go. That's your idea of an ad lib. Anyway, on the whole,
hey, I made money in my lifetime doing it.
Anyway, as recent Nolan movies go, it's better than Tenet, and it's up there with Dunkirk and Oppenheimer, and of course, very different from both of those
films. You know
films.
Why I'm not going to go see this film? Because he insists in making it in IMAX, and I can't stand IMAX.
That is, by the way to see it. I'm so sorry you're not going to go. Anyway, despite the length, and again,
you don't see it. Even if you're in the back row, there's too much of a screen there.
Well, that's fair. Let me just tell you, my attention for 3 hours did not flag for an instant. And, of course, it helped to visit the restroom beforehand, which is another problem you might have going to the theaters and seeing it in 70-millimeter IMAX, which you should. But I do want to point out that, strangely enough, in Los Angeles...
By the way, if you want to see it in IMAX, you know, because you're sitting there in L.A. being snooty and snotty, and I could be snooty and snotty and say, oh, I'll go to the IMAX theater here. There are only 25, I think, IMAX theaters in the entire country that are running it.
Well, my point is, we were at Universal City City Walk, the AMC there, and that IMAX has the most cramped rows, and it's smaller than most other IMAX
and
theaters.
And you like that. You like that, huh?
No, I didn't, but hear me out. The IMAX theater at AMC Burbank and the one at the Metreon in San Francisco are both way better. I don't know why they chose this particular location because my knees were up to my chin. And you're right. It's a massive screen. I was in the back row, and it was still a little overwhelming. So to that end, okay.
It feels like flying Delta, right?
Well, that's what it did feel like. And thankfully, I didn't have any baggage issues.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, the Odyssey, I was blown away by it. Again, I had quibbles, but not enough to not recommend the movie. It's sprawling. And also, you know, this thing about the perils and the cost of war, particularly an endless war like the one that we're currently dealing with, I think, in Iraq. I mean, that really resonated for me.
Okay.
Iran, excuse me, pardon me. I get my wars confused occasionally. All right, so we've been out for a couple of weeks. Let's talk about a few films that came out recently, not this weekend, but, you know, Hollywood and the film industry are beset by obstacles, such as the streaming options, and that stuff can impact theater box office. There's the fear of bankrolling something new and untested. So it's pretty much expected that studios are going to recycle proven, successful intellectual property with sequels and prequels and spinoffs. So we've seen like way too many well-received Disney animation films, especially the musical ones with classic songs, remade or re-engineered as live-action adaptations. Although, let's be straight up about this. Live-action is a bit of a misnomer when these like more fantastical stories rely on a very high percentage of quasi-realistic 3D computer animation surrounding the human actors. And some of these adaptations or these new versions with actors like Beauty and the Beast, they work when they stick to what made the cartoon special and they have the right cast. And then you have like Snow White and Lilo and Stitch. They don't land properly or match their source material. You know, and the live action villain origins that Disney's been doing for every Cruella, which is kind of rousing, Emma Stone playing the young Cruella de Vil from 101 Dalmatians, and it had a witty script. You got something like Maleficent with Angelina Jolie as the queen from Sleeping Beauty, given a clumsy backstory. So this latest transformation is Moana, and it takes the 2016 cartoon adventure, mixing Polynesian myth and a female empowerment theme with songs from Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it turns it into an earnest but almost rote redo with live actors. The basics of the plot are exactly the same. They concern young Moana, the plucky daughter of a tribal chief on an isolated Pacific island. She decides to defy convention and sail a boat past the reef around her tribe's island home to return a magical totem to a deity in order to save her people from famine. And you got this newcomer actress, Catherine Legaia, playing Moana in a chipper and plucky fashion. She takes over from Olili Gravallo, the original voice of Moana from 10 years ago. But the producers could not resist having Dwayne Johnson play the self-centered, ultimately heroic demigod Maui, a role he voiced in the animated original and in its sequel. Since Johnson provided the character model for Maui and is still in great shape and is a somewhat bankable star, it was kind of a no-brainer to have him on screen as the shape-shifting master of the wind, the sea, and wayfaring who wields like a giant CGI fishhook. And they reproduced the animated tattoos that caper across Maui's body, and the ocean is Moana's ally with waves that exhibit personality. You got stylized animated characters from the cartoon reproduced, like the goofy pet chicken Hey Hey. There's a tribe of pirate coconuts and a giant crab monster voiced as in the original by Jemaine Clement. And this was directed by a theater and TV veteran, Thomas Kail, who also directed Hamilton on Broadway and on film. So he's worked with Lin-Manuel Miranda, and it looks great. And the performers, such as they are, I guess they're committed to whatever they have to do in conjunction with all the CGI enveloping them. The girl sings with lilt and heart and power, and Johnson does his, you know, the rock thing. But does this improve or add anything new to Moana as it was first conceived and executed? No. And in fact, the screenwriter, Dana Ledoux Miller, mostly did a beat-for-beat reproduction of Jared Bush's 2016 script, and he gets co-authorship credit here. Bush's name is on it, but maybe it shouldn't be authorship, but like copy and pasting credit. If you never saw the cartoon, this might be fun to watch. You'd be better off checking out the first fully animated version. Moana's in theaters. I don't know that it's doing all that well, frankly.
It's doing terribly.
Okay, I got one I really liked. Not as much maybe as The Odyssey, but you know, it's a very different movie. You know the concept of a celebrity sex pass. A couple, generally married, swear allegiance to one another, but each has a specific famous person that they would be allowed to sleep with if the situation actually arises. Do you have something like that with Marjorie, Alex? I'm curious.
She picked a couple of years ago. She picked Robert Redford, and I had Scarlett Johansson, and then she changed hers, and so I changed mine to the cleaning woman. So
nice. You mean the one who comes to your house every week?
Right. You know,
that's a little easier at hand than I guess. Robert Redford sadly is a non-starter at the moment.
We don't have those. We never did, and I never had them with any of my wives either. You know,
it's kind of healthy. I'm glad that it shows.
No, what was unhealthy with the other women in my life? I cheated, so that was unhealthy.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, the celebrity sex pass is the premise of Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass, which is a good-natured and kind of meta comedy. And I think it deserves an appreciative audience. I think it's in select theaters. I think it's going to have a big audience on streaming. And it's meta because the movie features two well-known actors playing fictionalized versions of themselves, Curb Your Enthusiasm style. So those actors are John Hamm and John Slattery, who were co-stars on Mad Men, the TV show that brought both of them into the public eye, although, you know, Hamm is far more famous than Slattery, and that fact is a running gag in Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass. So you get the super adorable Zoe Deutsch, who was so good in the recent Netflix movie Voicemails for Isabel, and she's perfect as Gail. Gail is a small-town girl who's about to marry her high school sweetheart, Tom, played by Michael Cassidy, when she learns that he met his celebrity sex pass at a local book signing and slept with her. Now, this sends Gail on a quest to Hollywood with her bestie and fellow hairdresser, Otto, played by Miles Gutierrez-Riley, to kind of counter Tom's actions by meeting and sleeping with her own celebrity sex pass, who is John Hamm. And this leads to kind of a manic trip through Tinseltown at its most glamorous and seedy with a team up with a talent agency gopher, played by Ben Wang, the paparazzo, played by Ken Marino, who co-wrote the screenplay, and Slattery. And they all have their reasons to find John Hamm. And Slattery's is to see if Hamm can get him a career-boosting role. And there are definite shades of the Wizard of Oz here. You know, each of these particular characters on this quest, I guess Hamm is, what, the wizard in this story? But they each have, you know, equivalents, I would say, in the Wizard of Oz with Dorothy, the Tin Woodsman, the Cowardly Lion, and the Scarecrow. But this is directed by David Wayne, who also co-wrote the script with Marino, like I said. And he launched his filmmaking career with the 2001 cult comedy Wet Hot American Summer. And he has had some ups and downs since then, including a pretty hilarious Paul Rudd movie called Role Models. And Gail Daughtry and the Celebrity Sex Pass is definitely an up on his filmography. Now, it's not a gut buster, but it is a lot of fun, thanks to this kind of gentle skewering of fame and the movie industry and life in Hollywood. And there's a reliable supporting cast of comic actors, including Sabrina Impacciatore from The Paper, Fred Melamed, Michael Ian Black, Kerry Kenny, Richard Kine, Thomas Lennon. A lot of these people worked in The State alongside David Wayne and Ken Marino. That was a sketch group that had a show on MTV back in the day. And they all worked together with such kind of fluid fashion, I guess because of the experience. And I don't want to ruin surprises by naming too many of the famous cameos, but they're very cool. I will tell you that the celebrity sex pass for the boyfriend is Jennifer Aniston, and she shows up early in the film. Again, Gail Daughtry and the celebrity sex pass is in select theaters. Okay, I do want to quickly tell you about two more films. They're kind of little films. I don't know that they're going to get the attention that they should. Black Box is kind of a pretty cool mix of science fiction and horror. From the director of Final Destination 5 and the screenwriter of The Grudge, that's Warren Zeid, David Hillary are involved. These are, you know, longtime producers of these sort of low-budgety exploitation films, but this thing kind of worked. Essentially, it is a domestic flight. You know how sometimes on domestic airplane flights, the pilots lose contact with the the airport as they're heading in. There's just a moment where, you know, there's no connection. Well, this movie is about what happens when one of these flights loses contact with the air traffic controllers. And it turns into this incredible, like, frenzied circumstance when you find out over the course of the film what exactly is happening that has prevented the connection between the plane and the airport. And it's just wild. And I thought it looked way better than it should have looked. I mean, I think it was shot in Bulgaria and, you know, the all-American production, I think, for the most part, and it's in English, and it just kind of worked for me. It was tense, it was wild. Things that I didn't expect were going to happen happened, and it's kind of a mix of, you know, airplane in peril and, again, sci-fi and horror, and it worked. And I think it's something that's going to have a life on video or streaming, and I thought it was kind of cool. Again, it's called Black Box. And nobody particularly famous in the movie, but that doesn't matter because it just rocked. It worked for what it is. And we'll close out with Night Nurse, which is this willfully twisted but almost hypnotic thriller. You know, retirement homes and retirement communities are a thing. And this is about one of those communities. And in this community, Mimi Rogers, who's the most recognizable actor in the cast, runs the show. And she hires various nurses to each individually be signed to citizens of the community or patients, because some of them are not in the best of health. And a new night nurse shows up. And this woman is played by an actress named Semri Paksoy. I never saw her before. She's named Elena. And she's teamed up with a guy named Douglas, who is much more savvy than he behaves. You know, remember the mafioso who used to wander around downtown New York in a daze because he didn't want to be hauled in for his crimes?
Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Excuse me.
Was that the airplane landing finally in Black Box?
There's something I tried to play here. Oh, boy. Keeping up with everything is too much. Anyway, what were you saying?
I was saying, you remember the mafioso that used to wander around?
I'm trying to remember his name now, but yeah, I remember him. He wanted to prove to the feds that he was too crazy to go to jail.
Right, so he's incompetent. So this guy, Douglas, played by Bruce McKenzie, plays possum, essentially. But what he's doing is running a blackmailing scheme using the nurses to extract money from other wealthy denizens of this retirement community. It just was a really intriguing and, like I said, kind of twisted and hypnotic movie. First-time filmmaker Georgia Bernstein wrote and directed, and I thought Night Nurse was pretty solid. Now, it's not great, but it was very promising for the filmmaker. And again, the performances are cool, and it's kind of a sick and twisted, which occasionally I don't mind watching a movie like that. Night Nurse, it's in select theaters, and I guess it'll be streaming soon. What are you watching?
I was looking for, and that's why you had all that noise. All of a sudden, something decided to play. I was looking up HBO because I wanted to see the exact title of the new Larry David thing. It's like Life, Liberty,
Larry, and the Pursuit of Unhappiness.
Yeah. Okay, you got it. That's what we're watching. Very funny. It's kind of like, what if you took Larry David and threw him in the middle of history, and he was the most annoying person alive? You know,
when it works, it's really, really funny.
I think the segment with Rosa Parks and the fact that he's sitting next to her and is so boring and such a pain in the ass, she decides to go to the back of the bus.
Thanks for blowing the comedy punchline, but that's okay. It's so much fun to watch. My personal favorites were the speech by George Washington, which is so played by the late Rob Reiner, by the way, without a beard,
so you don't really notice it's him until you look closely, you know.
And it is hilarious, and in it, he is espousing all the things they're going to do to make sure America is a great and free country. And Larry keeps responding with things that Donald Trump has done.
Yeah, what if the guy does this and what if the guy does that? Well, that won't happen, you know.
Yeah, that'll never happen. And then one of the other colonists who shouts out, I don't know, this could really be a problem, is Jimmy Kimmel, which I thought was a piece of inspired casting. One more skit I want to mention. We talked about Lin-Manuel Miranda having written songs for Moana. Yeah. He plays the leader of the Boston Tea Party who did not invite Larry's character. And Larry is miffed that he didn't get invited to the Boston Tea Party. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, you forget, he's an actor. I mean, he was really good. He had every bit of rhythm and comic timing that you needed to play off of Larry David.
It's a very, very funny show. Very funny
on HBO Max. Totally.
And I'm also watching this other show on Apple called Lucky, which I kind of like.
With Anya Taylor-Joy as a kind of a devious young woman, the daughter of a career criminal.
She's not a good person at all.
No. I'm not saying she's playing against type, but she's quite good. And her nemesis, first of all, her father's in jail, played by Timothy Oliphant. And so she's been raised in a kind of criminal environment. And her big nemesis after the first two episodes so far is played by Annette Bening in an absolutely chilling performance, I thought.
Yeah.
So, I like it.
It looks like it promises to be a good show. So.
True that. And that's it, I guess.
I guess that's what we're watching.
All right. Well, you can check me out on Twitter at Culture Blaster if you dare. What a cesspool Twitter, a.k.a. X, is filled with right-wing lunatics. Or you can go to Facebook and the Michael Snyder's Culture Blast page and check in with my meetings with Alex and articles, etc. And right here on GabNet every couple of weeks.
And if you stay tuned, there's more GabNet coming right up.